So, okay, here we are. McLuhan Dewline, Volume 1, Number 10, April 1969. And the letters are vertical. It's a collage. And it says breakdown. And breakdown is vertical. And then going off into the horizon as breakthrough goes off, getting smaller and smaller as it goes through to perspective in the horizon. Then below it, it says an inventory. And that's just on an angle. So breakdown is breakthrough. And inventory, which is what he does every issue in all his books. He just makes inventories. So it has the first page has a collage of letters, and you can make out, well, it has I can see REA space D, so it looks like REA, and then the letter D separate, but then that, if you bring the D over to the REA, it becomes read. So he's broken letters, so he's broken up words. So the word read is broken up, the word dough, D-O-U-G-H, is broken up, the word rake is broken up, the word break is broken up, darken is broken up, set is broken up. The word break is not broken up. Isn't that clever? The word break, everything else is broken, but the word break is a normal word. And then it has berate is broken up, invent is not broken up, knee is broken up. Own is broken up. No, own isn't broken up. Rough isn't broken up. Down isn't. So you got break, invent, own, rough, down. Throne is broken up. Seat is broken up. Rant is broken up. Immanuel Kant is broken up. Then it says as inventory, and that's not broken up. Then bead is broken up. Through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, is not broken up. Then break is repeated. That's not broken up. Then rant is repeated. That's broken up. Rain, R-E-I-N, is broken up. Brain is broken up. And brunt is broken up. And at the bottom it says, breakdown is breakthrough, colon, and inventory. So then you totally go to the next page, and it has a middle column, vertical column with paragraphs, and on either side are little short blurbs or ideas or summary statements. So we've seen this format, I think, in one of the early Dewlines. So I'll read down the first page of the column. Instead of considering the nature and the effects of TV on human perception, Norman Mailer, then in brackets he names Mailer's novel called Miami and the Siege of Chicago. So this is early 69, and it is a novel about the riots in the summer of 1968 at both the Republican and Democratic conventions. That, you know, tumultuous summer of 68. Mailer has made a novel out of it. And McLuhan so has, I guess, read the novel. So he's saying, instead of considering the nature and the effects of TV on human perception, Norman Mailer, in Miami and the Siege of Chicago, laid down a huge smokescreen. He puts down Mailer. Now, he had debated Mailer the year before, in 67, well, no, 2 years before, this is 69, April 69. He had debated a couple times on CBC and different TV shows. They'd bring Mailer up from the States. He was like the top writer, the top novelist, so they had the Americans sent him to fight and argue with McLuhan. And there's a documentary put together by one of McLuhan's daughters, Stephanie, where Mailer talks about, this is in the early 80s, so he's talking about his experience at McLuhan 15 years before, 16, 17 years before, and he said, I used to think, Mailer is known to have a big ego, he said, I used to think I was the fastest gun in the West. Nobody had his mind as fast as mine. But when I met McLuhan, he says, I started to think, maybe I'm not the fastest mind in the West. So he actually was impressed with McLuhan. But here's McLuhan, after having those debates, putting Mailer down, he's being very, you know, rude. He's saying, his, meaning Mailer, his unawareness of media effects is matched by that of Mayor Daley, who is described by Mailer as, quote, ready to take on the electronic wrath of the semiconductors of this world, his voter-nourished blood full of beef and curses against the transistorized cabals of the media, unquote. So here's Mayor Daley, the demon icon of the riots in Chicago, and Mailer is putting down Daly, but McLuhan's saying, you're no better than Daly. So I'll reread the first paragraph here. Instead of considering, so he's saying, Mailer, you're not looking at the effects, you're looking at the figures. Instead of considering the nature and the effects of TV on human perception, Norman Mailer in Miami in the Seizures of Chicago laid down a huge smokescreen. His unawareness of media effects is matched by that of Mayor Daly, who was described by Mailer as, quote, ready to take on the electronic wrath of the semiconductors of this world, his voter-nourished blood full of beef and curses against the transistorized cabals of the media, unquote. So I forgot to mute everybody, so there's no noise.
All participants okay, are now muted.
So Mailer, there was footage of him at the convention saying, fuck you, to the news cameras, because the press was complaining about being beat up by his police. So that's what Mailer's referring to, full of beef and curses. Then the next paragraph, it is precisely as if the medical profession mounted a verbal barrage of wrath against smallpox and measles. Such a barrage would be warmly welcomed by the press, which desperately needs a large cast of citizens crammed with memorized scripts full of conflict and tensions. Columnist Max Lerner matches Mailer's unawareness of media as a disservice environment when he states that there is a spreading suspicion among both liberals and conservatives that the wells of communication in the United States are poisoned. As the cool medium of TV goes around the hot medium of the press, it naturally erodes the old, quote, journalistic freedoms, unquote. So hopefully I'm not reading too fast, but this is different. This is McLuhan. He is going to go to the Bilderbergers within a month or two of releasing this due line number 10, and that's where he's going to insult them, or at least insult the head of it. And once he gets back home, you can read it in May 69 in the letters of McLuhan. And it's after that that McLuhan is given no media coverage. Now, maybe he already is not getting media coverage, and he's picking up the backlash against him, so he now can afford to lash out at everybody. And he doesn't care. The next part, it says, any breakdown of the press bias for bad news would leave the bias of advertising for good news monotonously overexposed. If bad news is indispensable to the purveying of good news, in brackets, witness the sinking of the Saturday Evening Post, then it is time that the press had one last titanic field day before its bottom is torn off by TV. Now, this is going to be hard for you guys to understand. I'm saying a lot. It's like McLuhan's finally saying new things. And I can't read it real slow, but we'll see. I can understand. This could be hard to understand. So on page one, on the sides of this column that goes down the middle of the page, is one short thing says, what is that sound? How come there's sound coming in?
Oh, I'm working.
Oh, yeah, you're in my inside my phone. I can't mute you.
Sorry.
You look and mute yourself or something.
Sorry.
Okay. He has on the right, the cool TV medium revealed that Miami and Chicago were the breakdown of American political parties in hot machine politics. Then a little space. Then it says, it is of course the old 19th century rhetoric of the hot press medium that provides the moral indignation approach. Then there's another short gap. This diagnosis corresponds to the interpretation of the effects of a media change as a worldwide communist conspiracy. So he's talking about Max Lerner. So this statement is opposite the paragraph about Max Lerner saying, columnist Max Lerner matches Mailer's unawareness of media as a disservice environment when he states that there is a spreading suspicion among both liberals and conservatives that the wells of communication in the U.S. are poisoned. And McLuhan puts beside that, this diagnosis by Lerner corresponds to the interpretation of the effects of a media change as a worldwide communist conspiracy. So maybe I should have read these at the time. So the second paragraph, it says, it is precisely as if the medical profession mounted a verbal barrage of wrath against smallpox and measles. Such a barrage would be warmly welcomed by the press, which desperately needs a large cast of citizens crammed with memorized scripts full of conflict and tensions. And so he puts beside that paragraph, it is, of course, the old 19th century rhetoric of the hot press medium that provides the moral indignation approach. And the first paragraph where he's putting down Mailer, beside that he says, the cool TV medium revealed that Miami and Chicago were the breakdown of American political parties and hot machine politics. Then at the bottom, the fourth paragraph, it said, as the cool medium of TV goes around the hot medium of the press, it naturally erodes the old, in quotes, journalistic freedoms, unquote. And McLuhan has to the left, the child is father of the man, and that's with quotation marks around it. And then on the right, on the other side of the column, Sam Butler put it differently, quote, the chicken was the egg's idea for getting more eggs. So then the next paragraph, any breakdown of the press bias for bad news would leave the bias of advertising for good news monotonously overexposed. Remember, advertising is bad news for people because it's always telling you to buy new stuff and change. So it has a bad news effect. So you need people need a lot of technically, literally bad news to balance off the bad news of advertising. So bad news becomes good news, and good news, the ads, become bad news. So he's playing that up, and he's saying any breakdown of the press bias for bad news, they prefer bad news, would leave the bias of advertising for good news monotonously overexposed. If bad news is indispensable to the purveying of good news, in brackets, witness the sinking of the Saturday Evening Post, I think he's saying there that the Saturday Evening Post never had enough bad news in it. It was like the Cheese Whiz magazine. So if bad news is indispensable to the purveying of good news, then it is time that the press had one last titanic field day before its bottom is torn off by TV. And it has to the left of that this little statement, cool TV coverage of old hot processes revealed the natural bias of the newspaper for hot news, i.e. bad news, and newspapers capitalized. The next paragraph, until the rise of the reading public with the mass production of the printing press, there is neither private reader or private entrepreneur. Michael Polanyi, he was a writer, I think he's a scientist, I think he won a Nobel Prize, but I'm not sure. Michael Polanyi points out that there is no scarcity in pre-market economies, even when the entire population is starving. In a tribal society, everybody starves or thrives at once and at the same rate. This is parallel to the fact that there is no privacy in tribal societies. So to the left of that, he says, Robinson Crusoe, in brackets, mistaken prototype of the entrepreneur in some economics textbooks, close brackets, had solitude but no privacy. On the right of that paragraph, as data banks, i.e. credit ratings, extend, so money banks disappear. So he has, as data banks, in brackets, i.e. credit ratings, close bracket, extend, so money banks disappear. Then the third paragraph of page 2, properly speaking, information is in quotes, means pattern, and pattern is italicized, so there's several levels there. Properly speaking, information, in quotes, means pattern, rather than mere classified data. The information engineer points out that the telephone book has no information because it has too many data. Paradoxically, the information in the telephone book begins in the yellow pages, where classification yields to skills and gestalts and finger-walking. To the left of that paragraph, it says, IBM aphorism, : information overload equals pattern recognition. Then it says, in the next paragraph, down at the bottom of the second page, the convict has no public and thus no privacy. In our electric service environments, we are rapidly approaching the, quote, disservice, unquote, of the tribal pre-market condition again. He actually, you know what he does? He repeats this page, page 2, but in the repeat page, he has different comments on the side columns. So that's interesting. So we got to go back to the different.
It's very interesting because there is always a variation in the replay. Also, for example, the replay of the archetypes and.
There's always what? Did you say separation?
Variation.
Variation in the the replay is never the same.
The echo is never exactly the same.
Right, and
but
that,
it's what I was talking about before, this information overload that. We come to the end of the too much data, which is really not information because people cannot really process it.
Right.
They get lost in false.
There's no patterns for them.
And you're the only one that really making the pattern recognition among all these.
Information overload.
Information overload.
Yeah.
Right.
The paragraph until the Until the rise of the reading public with the mass production of the printing press, there is neither private reader or private entrepreneur. Michael Polanyi points out that there is no scarcity in pre-market economies, even when the entire population is starving. In a tribal society, everybody starves or thrives at once and at the same rate. This is parallel to the fact that there is no privacy in tribal societies. The quote to the right of that says, scarcity is a function of markets and of supply and demand. So that's visual space. It's a product of the printing press, scarcity. There's no scarcity before poverty. It's like wealth, literate wealth created poverty. So the next paragraph, now note this. So they repeated the page, so you think, oh, there's an extra copy. They made a mistake. Then you have to notice, no, they purposely repeated the page but had different quotes in the side columns. So in the paragraph, properly speaking, information in quotes means pattern being is italicized, rather than mere classified data. Properly speaking, information means pattern rather than mere classified data. The information engineer points out that the telephone book has no information because it has too many data. Paradoxically, the information in the telephone book begins in the yellow pages where classification yields with skills and gestalt and finger walking. And to the left it says, in the white pages, that's the pages with all the phone numbers, in the white pages the only order is alphabetical. And then it says, all for a bit. So then the bottom paragraph, which goes over to the third page, says the conflict has no public and thus no privacy. In our electric service environments, we are rapidly approaching the disservice of the tribal pre-market conditioning game. And disservice is in quotes. To the right, it has a small addition. The WASP, meaning white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, that's capitalized. The WASP is the service environment. Anything else is a mere disservice. So the WASP is a service environment, semicolon. Anything else is a mere disservice. Services are not commodities, and thus scarcity or abundance does not apply to them. Then it has a quote on the left. When Al Karpis was released from prison after 32 and a half years, he was asked what his greatest desire was in returning to civilian life. His answer was, quote, privacy, unquote. Then it says in the first paragraph in page 3, but actually page 4, because page 2 was repeated. So this is third for the columns, fourth for the sidebars. During the big blackout, and that was in the summer of 67 in New York City, during the, quote, big blackout, unquote, there was no scarcity of light. The law of supply and demand was turned off when the circuit broke. By the same token, affluence creates poverty just as publicity creates privacy and the white man creates the black man. Read that again. During the big blackout, there was no scarcity of light. The law of supply and demand was turned off when the circuit broke. By the same token, affluence creates poverty just as publicity creates privacy and the white man creates the black man. Now, I think some of this has been repeated in earlier due lines, but we got the advantage of a lot of events happened in 68, so McLuhan has new stuff to talk about. To impose the old archetypal patterns he's using, his formula, on new figures. So the second paragraph says, the easiest way to illustrate the principle of breakdown as breakthrough is via the motor car. In the show window, the car affords very little indication of its mode of operation. It is an art object. As the car approaches a condition of multiple breakdowns, the operator undergoes a real education in the nature of car-ness, car-ness. Until the car breaks down in many departments, it is a mere package or object. By the time it is tossed, this is the next paragraph, by the time it is tossed on the scrap heap, all its mysteries are unveiled. It is then accessible to the teenager as an object of play and retrieval and discovery. From having been a mere, quote, art object, unquote, it becomes, quote, found art, unquote. So, you know, in the art world, Roxy, found art was a big thing in the late 60s, early 70s. McLuhan is talking about the automobile as found art.
Marcel Duchamp with his toilet seat.
Yeah. So McLuhan is expanding on Duchamp's specialized use. So then the final paragraph on this page, the pun is a breakdown in straight communication by plain statement. The pun is a breakdown in straight communication by plain statement. It is a form of verbal resonance whose point is everywhere and whose boundaries are the verbal universe, or the logos itself, and logos is capitalized. This is a matter relative to quantum mechanics. Atomic, geez, he does it again. the page repeats, and we've got to do the quotes again with the side quotes. I'll have to watch this every time. See, so I'm sorry, but I have to read what we heard.
It's wonderful with the echoes.
Echoes, yes. And also,
this breakdown, tonight, Ion said Godzilla is coming, and the circuit is going to break. The blackout.
No, I missed that. What are you saying? An earthquake is coming? Did he say that?
No. Ion said tonight, Godzilla is coming.
Oh, Godzilla, yes.
So this circuit breaking,
yeah,
the blackout they're talking about is what we are going to see.
Yes, a huge media blackout, not just city lights, but the whole computerized, satellited environment, which will kill people. What's he call it? In the big EMP. The Evergreen said the biggest Armageddon will be this big blackout. Now, the TV show...
I would like to comment something also, and sorry to interrupt, before I forget. I'm thinking it's very interesting that the persons that are saying the most interesting thing about the Android meme and press and media, like McLuhan and you, are denied big media coverage.
Right. Well, we'd break, a lot of things would break.
Yes.
Remember, I was on the local radio station in Halifax in 1975, and the next day they lost their transmitter. A storm came because my words were on this little station. So I am the nuclear war that everybody is hoping doesn't happen. If I get media coverage, watch out. That'll be... a lot of people will be killed. The ultimate anarchist. I don't mean this. I don't want to do this. I'm not advocating it. So I just organized my papers here. So, yeah, McLuhan's seeing art and pattern in the local breakdowns, like the blackout in New York City. Advertising that one. Okay.
Well, so. I think it's like the ultimate vortex is work of art to blast the whole environment.
Yes, that's right. That's what's so interesting about Lewis. I mean, he really had something going. He was just, quote, so ahead of his time, you know? And they still are nervous about him. Let's see. I'm going to unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
So far, I probably won't finish this tonight. There's a lot of material, so we can stop since we're not going to rush to a finish. Eliza or Bert, got anything to say?
Bob, can you repeat what you said, read about pun as a breakdown of straight communication and the words after that?
Yeah, that's really important. That's a tremendous statement. You know, when I read these back in the late 60s when they came out, they were fucking amazing for me. I mean, he was explaining something really interesting, and they should still be powerful. So, Eliza, am I reading too fast, Eliza? Or did you fall asleep? Eliza's not even there, and when she hears the arc, wait, she's going to say something.
Yeah, Bob, my head just started feeling congested again, so... I wrote you an in quick. I thought if I sleep for an hour, it will feel better.
Oh, yeah. You had this congestion earlier tonight or something? Oh, yeah. The music cleared that for a while. Well, what's happening to you? I'm going to see if sleeping for an hour helps. See you on the flip side. So did we just wake you up?
I was hearing it. I was hearing kind of going in and out.
So what's this heart congestion? Is this emotional or food or allergies?
Not heart, head congestion.
Oh, head. You don't know what that is.
I barely get headaches. I hardly ever get headaches or congestion in the head, but I've been feeling it all day today.
Well, it's an important day for you. thank your stars, as I would say, good for you or something.
Yeah, he would say, how wonderful.
Yeah, how delicious.
How delicious.
Okay, so you're not going to be here for a while. Okay, that's all right. So let me mute again.
All participants are now muted. All participants are now muted. All participants are now unmuted.
Yes. That's being said. Yeah.
Very
this
good.
Is
yes.
A breakthrough issue, maybe. Okay.
All participants
so
are now
read,
muted.
The repeat. So that top paragraph. During the big blackout, there was no scarcity of light. The law of supply and demand was turned off when the circuit broke. By the same token, affluence creates poverty just as publicity creates privacy, and the white man creates the black man. On the left, it says, the gold standard was toppled by commercial uses of gold. World silver rule was ended by the silver screen, and that would be movies in the 20s and 30s. On the right side, it says, privacy is created by the public as is scarcity by affluence and the market. Imprisonment or enforced solitude reveals the nature of the public. Solitude reveals the nature of society as electricity reveals the nature of the machine in the act of destroying it. Then the next paragraph in the middle column, the easiest way to illustrate the principle of breakdown as breakthrough is via the motor car. In the show window, the car affords very little indication of its mode of operation. It is an art object. As the car approaches a condition of multiple breakdowns, the operator undergoes a real education in the nature of car-ness. Until the car breaks down in many departments, it is mere package or object. And the quote to the right of that is, the generation gap revealed the nature of identity. Once a personal or social image has been scrapped by new technology, it can only be recovered by violence and suffering. Then it continues the car thing. By the time the car is tossed on the scrap heap, all its mysteries are unveiled. It's just like all the mysteries of Ulysses is unveiled in terms of how to read it, but I'm going to create the final mystery with my explanation of the charts, which none of the other scholars would come up with.
Listen, actually what you just read explains the Agamemnon. He says the new technologies erases the old identity, and it can only be recovered by violence. And
yes. And McLuhan said, all wars are fought. All wars are the last war. They're fought for the spoils of the past environment.
You said the anti-environment to the advertisement is the bad news. And we never got so awful news that we are getting now.
Right.
All these catastrophes.
Well, and the media has to, the newspaper world has to have bad news, so they got to really up the ante of bad news because people are simultaneously becoming more and more indifferent, and also that leads to more violence, so more bad news, and the media is going to report even more.
Yes, and the only anti-environment, as you said before, is iron.
Yeah.
Iron is the only thing that can be an anti-environment to that, Andrew means. Bad news.
Right.
Blast.
And
the mystery landscape.
Right. By the time it is tossed on the scrap heap, all the car's mysteries are unveiled. It is then accessible to the teenager as an object of play and retrieval and discovery. Now he has teenager. There's a space between teen and ager. I don't know if that's intentional. From having been a mere, quote, art object, unquote, it becomes found art. Found art, in quotes. Then it says, the pun is a breakdown in straight communication by plain statement. I may not have read that properly before. It is a form of verbal resonance, that's acoustic space, whose point is everywhere and whose boundaries are the verbal universe or the logos itself. And then it's on the right it says, the word pun in quotes, is from Latin punctum, P-U-N-C-T-U-M, or point in quotes. Do you get it? The word pun, he says, is from Latin, punctum, or point. Do you get it? Question mark. Then,
do you get the point?
Yes. And it has no point. The point is everywhere.
Yes, those are so subtleties. Amazing.
What'd you say? Subtleties?
These subtleties.
Yeah, the subtleties. They're good, eh?
Foreign.
This is the kind of subtleties an aesthete like yourself likes. You like these subtleties. This is a matter, okay, talking about the pun, this is a matter relative to quantum mechanics. Atomic physicists are still looking for matter as a point in space, in spite of their own recognition of the chemical bond as resonance. See the physics? You like
because,
that one?
Caroline asked, what is the sound or the frequency? What is really, from
right.
where it comes from?
Right.
Yeah, from where does the logos come?
Where does the sound? What is the original big note, Zappa used to ask? And McLuhan would say, well, you're looking for a sound in space, within visual space framework. There's no space to be in before visual space, before the alphabet, before writing. Everything was like the verb, like the pun, a world of verbal resonance whose point is everywhere and whose boundaries are the verbal universe or the logos itself. How could the logos be a boundary? And that's why this is a matter.
Listen, we're looking for the point, this particle.
Right.
The God particles, the microparticles.
Right.
And we don't get the point because it's not visual space.
Right.
Visual space where we have to look for is in this chemistry, in the substance. And
I used to make Harry Whittier, the English prof at Dalhousie University in Halifax, laugh when I said, the Bible's a misprint. In the beginning was the word. I said, no, in the beginning was the pun.
Wow.
It was a pun. Verbal resonance. It's more democratic. Anyways, it's a matter relative to quantum mechanics because, you know, quantum mechanics started to point out, I guess, somewhere in there that the electron was in two places at once. That's visual man trying to see the non-point. And he can only allow two points to happen. So he says, oh, the electron's in two places at once, when actually the electron is everywhere. So,
wow.
This is pretty good stuff when you read it 50 years ago. You could really
Amazing.
Build up.
Amazing. Because it's now that we can get it. We
right.
can get the point.
So you see, when I was reading and getting it 50 years ago, you see where my superiority complex came from. I actually knew something that other people didn't know.
Yes, you saw that in the beginning was the punk. Nobody could understand what we were talking about.
Yeah,
that.
That's right. And then he says, so we did that, and then we're on to the next page, and this is a new page, and let's see if it's repeat. Oh, that's why there's so many pages. There's a lot of repeats, but the next page is not a repeat, so we only have to do it once. So the first paragraph on this next page, I don't know how many pages we've done. The pun is a major example of breakdown as breakthrough, since it draws attention to the nature of language itself as multi-leveled. The Greek word for word in quotes, is mythos, M-Y-T-H-O-S. Logos was translated by the Romans as, and this is italicized, ratio et oratio. That's R-A-T-I-O, then E-T, which is and then O-R-A-T-I-O, ratio et oratio. So the logos was called that, since it includes both thinking and speaking, hearing and doing, impact and closure. So you're getting into the visual effect of the alphabet in the Roman Empire, and they're starting to split things up. Now, yes, to the right, to the left of that, it says visual space, capital letter, capital V, capital S, period, then acoustic space, capital A, capital S, period. So it's the visual space, dot, acoustic space, dot. So it's making like each one is a whole sentence, but it doesn't have a verb or noun. On the right of this amazing quote, which I'll read again, the pun is a major example of breakdown as breakthrough, since it draws attention to the nature of language itself as multi-level. That's what Joyce did. He built a whole book on a pun, and he concluded everything in Finnegan's Wake. The Greek word for word is mythos. Now, I've explained myth is the encapsulation and reduction of a complex process. So a word is mythic. It reduces. Logos was translated by the Romans as ratio and oratio, since it includes both thinking and speaking, hearing and doing, impact and closure. Those separations, thinking, speaking, hearing and doing, impact and closure, do not happen in the Eskimo world. The Eskimo would say, how do I know stone if I didn't have the word stone? So the primitive person, preliterate person, is more merged with the environment. Once you bring in writing and visual space, you start to get a detachment. You start fragmenting things. So it says on the right, the sidebar, when physicists discovered the duality of relationships of field and particle, they tried to determine which was prime. They didn't, and in brackets, and still don't know, that they had discovered acoustic space in the subatomic world, but dimly realized that it was inconsistent with their own visual metaphors. Then he says, pun again.
Wow.
Isn't that impressive?
It's very impressive.
Yeah, this is stuff. McLuhan is now explaining stuff that is not in his books. The Duhlein.
And it's amazing that he's saying that to the Wildenberg.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're saying he's saying that to the Gutenbergs? Is that what you said?
Yeah, you said he did this discourse in front of the...
Yeah, these kind of thoughts, they might be somewhere in Understanding Media, but I don't recall them. This is like him publishing what he left out of Understanding Media. And so it's new stuff. He never explained the pun like he's doing here. He never related to the Logos. He didn't relate it to atomic physics and subatomic physics like he's doing here.
Yes, and we will say now, logos is not ratio, the mental reason and oration, which is speaking. But
yes.
Logos is the non-physical.
In the physical.
And tonality, or how would you describe it?
It's mythic in the sense that the Greek word for word, I am put so much importance on words. And the Greek word for word is mythos, so the knowledge about the word, and Ion's knowledge is a punning knowledge, it's mythic, talking technically, not myth as in fake. It's technically the right word. It's mythic, all-inclusive and reductive and transparency. It's everything you could want in super sugar. All right? So I'm going to read that again. When physicists discovered the duality of relationships of field and particle, and I would add, they saw this duality because they brought their visual bias, their Gutenberg split schizophrenia, to looking at electronic phenomena. When physicists discovered the duality of relationships of field and particle, they tried to determine which was prime, which was figure, and which was ground. They didn't, and then brackets, and still don't, close bracket, know. They didn't and still don't know that they had discovered acoustic space in the subatomic world, but dimly realized that it was inconsistent with their own, in brackets, visual, close bracket, metaphors. It was inconsistent with their visual space. Then he has pun again, so like Finnegan, P-U-N again.
Yes, and I see here the mistake in the power of providing power to humanity. They divided electricity into polarities.
Right.
And
they're charging for
they
it.
To like control it with circuits and cables and.
Right.
And,
that was the battle between Edison and Tesla.
Yes, and that's why one of the big revolutionary things that Ion is bringing is going to be this liberation of power of.
Yeah. You'll be able to take back your power literally. So, now, Ion had explained, I don't know if I ever talked about it, how Morgan made the right decision. Tesla was too driven, and he wasn't cool with Morgan, and Morgan was ready to not be the terrible capitalist. He was ready to do whatever Tesla could do, but Tesla didn't know how to get his act together. Now, it's maybe better to hear Ion talk about it. It happened somewhere, and I think I played it. Morgan gets bad press. Okay, so...
I think they could not control energy with Tesla technology. He, as you say, he didn't have his act together. And they had to choose the...
Yeah, Ion said. People what?
This very limited type of power with polarities and cables and circuits and hardware, and like very primitive in many ways.
Yeah, but it was the way visually biased man could organize it. Now, Ion once Ayn talked about people who started to get their power and then blew it. Hitler was one, but he says Tesla blew it. Tesla's on the screw-up level, and maybe Moses did too. Can't remember if he said Moses. So the next paragraph says, a famous breakthrough, which is essentially a pun, was the discovery by Newton that gravity was really levity, or, quote, action at a distance, unquote. Newton's contemporaries thought that he had, with his theory of invisible force, retrieved a lot of old scholastic garbage, and so christened him, quote, a gothic ape, unquote. And then to the left it says, the gap in nature that his, meaning Newton's, gravity portrayed later became the, quote, missing link, unquote, which also turned out to be an ape. So they accused Newton of being a gothic ape, retrieving medieval sensibility, because remember he studied the Bible, you know, the Book of Revelation or Daniel or something, and they didn't know that really until his papers were bought many decades, centuries later. So they called him a gothic ape, but the ape becomes the metaphor for the missing link, which came because of his idea of gravity. Now, that's pretty good commentary on science. I'll read
that. Yeah, the missing link is a perfect visual for the disconnection
right.
of the fallen man.
Yes, it's the image in the Vatican, right? Which is the emotion reaching out. The little man's reaching out to connect to something, some externalized God. So I'll read that again. A famous breakthrough, which is essentially a pun, was the discovery by Newton that gravity was really levity, or action at a distance. Now, McLuhan would explain that levity was up pull, gravity was down pull. But the idea the moon was pulling on the earth is up pull, levity, laughter is up pull. So Newton discovered levity.
May I interrupt? And this feeling of missing the link to the internet to try to connect to the Android meme that is taking the place of the separated God.
Yes. Yep. The
little man thing.
What was the last word?
Connecting to this Android meme. Yeah, little man thing connecting to the Android meme.
Right.
Is putting them their power back as far as to create their environment in the social media.
In the social software world. Yeah, and they don't know the internet is inside them. They think they visually have to connect to some environment out there in the outer kingdom. They don't know how much they've merged with the electric technology, the digital technology. McLuhan said that we had total fusion man and technology by 1950. So the Android meme replays that. Oh, you like that? Did you go, what?
Yeah.
Or wow?
Wow.
See, this kind of stuff is what you would have loved to have heard 20 years ago.
Yes, but well.
You would be no longer with us, though. You'd be dead. You wouldn't be able to take it. So.
No, I think even if I heard 20 years ago, I would not get the whole point,
right,
as McLuhan said. But you did. That's why you were so feeling so superior.
That's why I went around with a superiority complex. That's right. I was in charge. Is that what you just said? Did you just say superiority? I think I heard
yes.
you. Yeah. So I'll read that again. A famous breakthrough, which is essentially a pun, was the discovery by Newton that gravity was really levity or action at a distance. Newton's contemporaries thought that he had, with his theory of invisible force, retrieved a lot of old scholastic garbage and so christened him a gothic ape. Then to the left, the gap in nature that his gravity portrayed later became the missing link in quotes, which also turned out to be an ape. The missing link was the ape. So you see, McLuhan's making fun of science, making fun of evolution.
Yes, but that's the best example of how we fell into the trap of false premises, the
yep.
missing link, and the thinking that we come from the ape. And like that, there are many examples in science that are total false premises and had to be erased with the breakdown.
Yes.
And as breakthrough that we are going, well, it's already happening.
This is a long due line. We're not going to finish it tonight. And you got to go in five
you
minutes.
You have 6 minutes.
Six minutes, right. So we'll do a couple more. So at the bottom of this page, Darwin's theory of the missing link is a breakdown that proved to be a very great breakthrough indeed. As long as people were looking for a totally unified universe in the 18th century style of the great chain of being, that's in quotes, great chain of being, they were trapped in a merely connected visual metaphor from which quantum mechanics releases us by its metaphor of field and resonance. Next paragraph. The great contribution of the missing link, in quotes, was to turn nature into a whodunit in which everybody could become a sleuth. In fact, it was at the time that Darwin was hung up on his missing link that Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story based on the missing link in the chain of evidence. Isn't that awesome? What great.
Amazing.
Crossing great all kinds of subjects and classified disciplines and swallowing them up with these patterns. I read that again. Darwin's theory of the missing link is a breakdown that proved to be a very great breakthrough indeed. As long as people were looking for a totally unified universe in the 18th century style of the, quote, great chain of being, unquote, they were trapped in a merely connected visual metaphor from which quantum mechanics releases us by its metaphor field and resonance. The great contribution of the, quote, missing link, unquote, was to turn nature into a whodunit in which everybody could become a sleuth. In fact, it was at the time that Darwin was hung up on his missing link that Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story based on the missing link in the chain of evidence. So, you see, McLuhan doesn't put down evolution. He finds a service in the concept of Darwin, or the concept of missing link, within the realm of the...
Yes, and for example, the Greeks thought the rhapsode link, like the little man to the great mythic, that the words are like the linking, that are like magnets, the men that are listening to the rhapsode to the higher ideals and knowing.
Now, did you say that they link to the great mythic? What was the word you said?
The word of the rhapsode was the link between the audience, the little men, the seats, also like the words as spermaticus.
Yeah. Linked between
the
little men.
Were the link between the little man, the audience, and the higher ideas and the mythic, the gods.
Right. And that would be, I'm not using the word mythic in
the
that
rhapsode.
Sense. You're using the word myth in the traditional sense.
Yes, but yes, I see the link of the word of science.
Right.
Also accentuates the logos as a very important way of engaging non-physical.
Right, so I will finish this page.
The missing link is the word.
Right.
Like we had to engage with the non-physical talking.
Yeah, that's right.
To do the real linking, it's not an ape, it's the logos.
Yes. The breakdown of narrative art and storylines led to the much greater breakthrough into poetic symbolism and discontinuity. Symbolism, i.e. throwing together by juxtaposition, that's in brackets, is a principle of randomness which our telegraph press exploits to the full. So you had Baudelaire and Rimbaud, the symbolist poets, and they're miming the telegraph press. Then he has on the right.
Yes, and the arts and Hollywood feed on symbolism and...
Yes.
And mythic.
Yes, the old visually biased forms. And then he has on the right.
The archetypes.
Yeah, but the archetypes are come for visual man. There's no archetypes in pre-literate or post-literate man. At best, the archetypes for post-literate man is the machine environments themselves are the archetypes. And that's what McLuhan proposes. Okay, so he says on the right, as in a sound light show, sound light hyphenated, as in a sound light show, the reader tends to merge with the environment so created. Then it says, I read that, the breakdown of narrative art and storylines led to the much greater breakthrough into poetic symbolism and discontinuity. Symbolism, i.e. throwing together by juxtaposition, is a principle of randomness which our telegraph press exploits to the full. Next final paragraph on this page. The instant news gathering services of the Telegraph eliminate, quote, all rational order of connectives, unquote, in favor of mere dateline italicized. Instead of connected discourse, the electric press offers a service environment or a mosaic image of the entire society in action. And that's in italics, society in action. The editorial viewpoint or continuous statement is a kind of dramatic soliloquy. So this page is repeated, so next week we will repeat the pages and include the other side quotes. So
yes, it's interesting because these editorials and the slogans in advertisement became the rhapsode that little man thinks are connecting them to something.
Right.
Like the knowing, like they think they're informed, or they think they have some...
They have a place to fit...
Ideal, mythic state.
Right. They have a place to fit their data.
Yes, and that's the thing with the Marlboro Man, that when they did that, cigarettes sold like never before because they were using this ideal, this mythic Western cowboy.
Right.
And it's not about the cigarettes, but the ideals people want to connect to.
Correct. But you have to go. 11:01. So we'll talk to you later. Well, let me see. Wait a minute. Let's see if...
All participants are now unmuted.
I've unmuted you.
Take care.
I'm finally shutting up.
You what? What'd you say?
I'm shutting up.
Shutting up, yes. Finally shutting up.
Yes.
Wasn't that awesome, Bert, these ideas that I'm
yes.
reading out?
Yes. The,
these are amazing,
particles of
really. Because
amazing.
Did you say it's from the fictive?
From the fictive? What are you saying?
No, you said it was amazing. And in which time, in which year?
April, this comes out April 69.
Wow. No, that was...
And his interview is on the stands at this time, his Playboy interview, which was a pretty amazing interview. No one had read something so detailed and intelligent in Playboy before. Okay, that's as much as I'm going to do today.